My guest on our program is Wayne Weingarten, and Wayne is with the Pacific Research Institute, PRI, does the PRI Center for Medical Economics and Innovation. And Wayne, first, thanks for taking some time to visit with us and talk to us. We'll visit about a couple of different things, but in particular, we're going to talk about 340B. So first, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
340B is a program, it's a federal program. Can you get just kind of a little summary for listeners? Because a lot of people, they're going to hear a number and they're going to start tuning out if they're not really aware what 340B is. It is tied in with healthcare, and it's got to do with, well, with a lot of with pharmacies.
Right. You know, and you know, generally when they start naming programs after parts of the tax code, you know you're in trouble. But 340B, the purpose of it is to help those covered entities, that they call, which are hospitals, clinics, that serve people who are lower income, uninsured, what you know they call vulnerable populations. And so the 340B program, what it's supposed to do is let these institutions buy drugs well below market. They would then get reimbursed at market rates, which creates a subsidy for them. And that subsidy is supposed to help lower income people, vulnerable populations, receive care. And it helps the institution itself so that they can provide the care. So you know, it obviously, its goals are unassailable. It's trying to help low income people get the health care that they need. So its intentions are wonderful. The problem is you can't judge a program by its intentions.
Sure.
You have to judge by its outcomes.
Well, that's what the intent was back 30 years ago when they were working on this and putting it together. And it was going to be kind of limited in the beginning, but it's kind of morphed a little bit again over time, and especially in probably about the last, I'm going to say, 10 to 12 years or so.
Exactly. And that's, I think, a very important distinction, right? That when it was doing, it's an overcomplicated program. It's something the government always loves to overcomplicate things. But when it was tailored to those, what they call covered entities that are actually serving that purpose, it was doing something valuable, and it was doing it in a way that wasn't creating damage to the broader healthcare system. When it grows exponentially and it goes so that you have hospitals that actually provide less charity care than the average hospital, but they're still 340B institutions. And so now what you have is, in effect, a subsidy where you're actually, you know, giving income to these very profitable institutions that are not actually fulfilling the mission of the program. And that's where a lot of the trouble comes into play.
So listeners understand, Pacific Research Institute, nonpartisan, you take a look at all kinds of different things, either side of the aisle, and take a look, is it meeting its purpose, its intent? I'm guessing that's the sort of thing you guys look for?
Absolutely. So you, Pacific Research Institute, we look at lots of different economic, fiscal, budget issues. One of the things that we spend a lot of time on is healthcare. And that's one of my specialties, dealing with healthcare in particular. Pharmaceuticals, simply because it's such an important part of kind of our healthcare ecosystem, and also there's so many adverse incentives that people are getting harmed. So we have to improve how it operates, and in trying to get a better way of better, more affordable drugs, more innovation, trying to create that environment. One of the obstacles right now is this 340B program.
Sure. So one of the things that Pacific PRI has done. And you did multiple states, you did select hospitals that took a look at different things. What kind of parameters were you looking at? What were you doing with the study?
Well, with the study, what I wanted to do is really, there's been a lot of studies out there. The Government Accountability Office has looked at the 340B program, saying that the oversight of the program is lacking. And what I wanted to do was I wanted to look at, are the 340B institutions actually fulfilling the mission overall? And so what I looked at is CMS, the Medicare and Medicaid agency in the government, they collect data on all the hospitals. So I was able to look at the vast majority of hospitals and look at the 340B institutions compared to the non-340B institutions. Again, looking at hospitals. And I was able to look at the charity care that they provide, and then the profit. You know, you have to put air quotes around profit because many hospitals are nonprofits, but they still earn revenues over expense.
Sure.
And so when you look at first charity care, which you see is the 340B institutions, they actually provide less charity care relative to their revenues. So if the average hospital spends about 2% of their revenues on charity care, 340B institutions are only doing about 1.7%. Yet they are more, their net income, their income over expenses is higher. They earn over 6% of profit, again with air quotes, compared to all hospitals earning about 4.6%. So what you have is a situation where institutions that are supposed to be serving, kind of providing more charity care, right, supposed to be serving those underserved groups, they're doing less and they're making more money. And when you combine that with lots of studies that show the profitability of 340B drugs and how much 340B actually subsidizes their income, you know, you see the strong connection of not actually performing its mission. It's just screaming out for reform.
No, I was looking at at some of the data that you've presented and the information that we have pertaining to Iowa. You did actually take a look at a couple of hospitals. They're in eastern Iowa, but they are larger facilities. And again, they fall into that mold there that you just talked about having a sizable profit and not actually providing that charity care that many others do, or at least at the level.
That's right. And what I wanted to do with that part of the study is when I was looking at the CMS data, it didn't give very much in terms of growth. And what you had said earlier is very true, that the abuse of the program is a relatively new phenomenon. And so I wanted to look over time, how has profits grown? How has the revenues grown, to see if we can see these patterns over time? And so I needed to rely on the IRS data that they file that's publicly available. I can't look at the entire universe. It's just too many. So I did a sample of hospitals across multiple states, Iowa being one of them. And that's exactly right, what you had said, that when you look at the net income growth, when you look at the revenue growth, these institutions, they're seeing faster revenue growth than other hospitals, or faster profitability growth than kind of you see in the industry. So again, you're seeing these 340B institutions performing financially better. But again, in the sample, it was actually even more stark that they're not fulfilling that basic mission of serving the underserved populations to a greater extent, right? And relative to their size. And that's an important. I'm not saying that they don't serve these groups. It's just that they're not doing it more so than the other hospitals, and that's actually the purpose of the program, is to be supporting those who are serving those disproportionate groups.
I know that in the studies covered multiple different states and things like that. Do you see, is it rural areas affected more than, because, you know, that's one of the bigger things we have. We got a little further ways to go to get to some of our healthcare facilities. Is it more rural, urban? It doesn't really matter, or is it just that we're finding some of these larger facilities, larger places are kind of taking advantage of the program?
Yeah, the geography, didn't see that much of an impact. It could be there, just wasn't able to tease those impacts out. So we certainly didn't see that. But the one of the important aspects that we actually get into in terms of that of how it's gotten askew, which I think is where you were going with that, is the idea of contract pharmacies. Because originally, what the program did is it said, many of these hospitals that are serving the intended population, they didn't have a pharmacy, so they couldn't actually serve the groups. So the idea was you could have one contract pharmacy if you didn't have one internal, and that way you could, obviously provide the service. Mm-hmm. Well, that got expanded right when the kind of explosion of the program happened. At the same time, what you had is you could have as many contract pharmacies as you want, and it wasn't limited to just those who didn't have a pharmacy internal. And so what you've seen is now tens of thousands, I think it's almost 100,000 contract pharmacies now exist. It's explosive growth in the number of contract pharmacies, many of which the locations are Walgreens, they're CVS. I mean, they're major, you know, institutions that don't require a government subsidy to their profits. But the contract pharmacies, obviously they participate, so they get some of the revenues from the 340B program. And most importantly, the added have degraded with this explosive growth in contract pharmacies. So you have, and that's something, again, across rural, across urban, to some extent, I think you could be more rural in the fact that, like you were saying, you have to drive farther to get to those locations. But it's really that contract pharmacy link that becomes very important.
Okay. Well, I do know, and because I don't want to have to explain everything to everybody, but obviously the study shows that we do have some issues with this program. And again, the basic premise in the beginning was to provide additional assistance for the low and needy, the people that need that additional assistance through their hospitals, through their health care. What are some things that could be done outside, drawing attention to this, of course? What are some things that could be done to try to get us back to where we wanted? Because initially, it sounded like the program was a good idea.
Well, absolutely. I mean, helping people get access to care is very important. I think the most important thing is we have to bring it back to its original purpose, right? So we need to reform, one, to the contract pharmacy relationships, where we need to bring down that ideally to one, and ideally restrict it to possibly those who don't have an internal pharmacy, again, so that you can get better financial controls of the program. Something I think that's important is I think patients should be benefiting from this as well. If you have commercial insurance and you go to a 340B institution, you could actually still pay very high prices for your medicines based on a very expensive price that isn't reflective of the 340B discount. And so I think the idea that if we're trying to help the underserved, they should be benefiting from this process as well. That's not part of the original, but I think that's an important reform where those who, those people we're actually trying to help are actually benefiting from the process. But, broadly speaking, rolling it back so it's a manageable level, it can actually serve its purpose and only serve those institutions that it was originally designed for, those who are serving that disproportionate, what they call disproportionate share hospitals, those that are serving that intended population. That's the key. Right now, it's grown to 8, 10, about 12% of the market of drugs are now flowing through 340B program. That's just what you're doing, stressing the system too much.
Sure.
It's unaffordable, and it actually jeopardizes the kind of the health of the industry.
And we certainly know that there's a lot of focus on drugs and drug prices right now. So, it has been actually for a little while anyway. So it's still one of those ongoing challenges that that we're facing. And again, we do have a sizable older population that, again, they're getting into that, having that Part D prescription medication coverage and things like that. So, again, these are all challenges that we're facing going forward.
Absolutely.
Wayne Weingarten has been our guest on the program. Once again, he is with the PRI, or the Pacific Research Institute, and again, he is the works in the area, particularly of medical economics and innovation, and we've been talking about the 340B program. Again, it's been around for a while. If people want to find out more about this in particular, about following along what's going on and potential implications on their facilities, their hospitals, are there ways they can find out more about that?
Well, you can see all the kind of the work that PRI does on these issues at pacificresearch.org or medecon.org. We have all of our studies on this and many other healthcare-related issues if people are interested in seeing.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it and getting us informed about what's going on. 340B program, again, it's been around for, like we said, almost 30 years. It's kind of morphed about about 10, 12 years ago. Again, it had to do with the Affordable Care Act and some of the things that were done back then. The studies indicate not necessarily providing as much assistance to those that originally were targeted for assistance, being able to get that anymore. Wayne Weingarten has been our guest on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks so much for having me.